listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything. All right, everybody, you're listening to The Brian Callen Show. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/BCS to download your free book. I just listened to Our Inner Ape, which is a good book about apes, basically, but he draws a corollary, obviously, to human beings. And says we can learn a lot about our nature if you look at our cousins, the bonobos, the mountain gorillas, and chimpanzees in particular. Especially bonobos, though, which are a miniature version of a chimpanzee. And the thesis is really that human beings are the most bipolar ape. Chimpanzees will rip your face off, but they can also find a little bird and they'll nurture it and try to nurse it to life. So human beings are a variation of that, just an extreme version. You know, you've got human beings are capable of impossible savagery and cruelty. Look at Rwanda or Nazi Germany. And then incredible generosity and kindness and building things for the sake of beauty, the Taj Mahal and the Parthenon and our heroes like Gandhi and Martin Luther King, etc., who are willing to sacrifice their very lives for the good of others. So it's an interesting book, and you can never learn enough about human nature. And he does so through the prism of the ape. I recommend it. And remember, go to audiblepodcast.com/BCS to get your free book today. All right, everybody, this is the Brian Callen Show. And my guest is Brendan Schaub. And I know you get people go, hey, it's Brandon Vera. It's Brandon Vera. I just rolled with Brendan in his apartment overlooking the marina. And by rolled, I mean fucked. No. I mean jiu-jitsu'd. And he's a 6'5", 250-pound professional fighter. And I'm a 170-pound actor. So you do the math. I'm producing estrogen as we speak.
We're both breathing pretty hard.
I know. I gave you...
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Good run for my money. You good underhooks.
Yeah, but then you put me in a Darce choke.
That's true.
That I made a mistake.
Happen. I did a little mistake.
With those ridiculous... Made a little mistake. Unfortunately, I got to be honest.
Little mistake.
And what's funny is that when you're in those clutches, I realized I was like, oh, I could die. You could kill me. You could actually take my life. I was saying you were standing next to my buddy Dove Davidoff, and it looked like you had won him in a contest. It's like, oh, that's Brandon before you add the water. I mean, Brendan. Now I'm thinking of Brandon Vera. You are. I wanted to interview you because you're. First of all, you just won your last fight against LeVar Johnson, which I called, but I was very worried about you because.
Me too.
Well, because you know you're a heavyweight, and at the level you guys are at now, the level you guys are punching at, the margin for error is so fucking slight. Because what people don't realize is that you guys punch twice as hard as 155-pounder.
No, at least.
But your heads are the same size.
True. Mine is.
Yeah, you
LeVar's
have.
Isn't.
No, LeVar's
is like a water bottle.
You have an unusually normal head. You have a normal head on a huge
small.
Body.
Pretty small and a big body.
Yeah. You have a small head and actually
seen,
small
you
hands.
You ever seen Beetlejuice when he puts the sprinkle, the dust on him, his head shrinks
exactly.
down?
Exactly.
That's what my head looks like, people.
But at least it's hard to hit.
Yeah, true. Sometimes.
Sometimes. But you are, I love that you're 28 years old, and the other day we were talking about how you beat LeVar and controlled him on the ground. You fought the fight you were supposed to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hit me. You just gave me a pound. You go, I got this, brother. Yeah. I got this. You're going for the belt.
That's the only reason I do it.
You don't even think of yourself as a fighter. You think of yourself as a competitor in a way, right? I mean,
yeah. To me, it's not really a fight. It's more of just a competition. It's no different than playing basketball 1-on-1 or playing golf. I'm just as competitive as it gets. And I hate losing more than I like winning. I cannot stand it. Like when I win, I expect it. Like this win was whatever. I expected to win. Every fight I expect to win. And when you lose, it's like the end of the world.
Well, you played football on such a high level. And I always say if you can make it to the cut, the NFL cut,
yeah.
if you can make it to that, yeah. you're already a very special athlete. It's such an impossible sport and so difficult to even make it in the NFL. So I would imagine that kind of carries over into fighting. But what's the difference between football and fighting for you?
I'd say the mental aspect. I would say fighting is just such a grind. And that's the reason a lot of these other athletes can't cross over. The grind is you're your own boss. No one's calling you to get up every morning, get to the gym at 6 a.m. and train three times a day and drive an hour to the OC and drive back to West Hollywood and do all this stuff.
It's kind of soul numbing, I've heard.
100%.
That kind of training all the time, it's not fun.
It has to be like a love-hate relationship. If you love it, which I do, for me, I'm living my dream. There's nothing I'd rather do in this world than fight for the UFC. But if you don't hate it at some point, then you're not training hard enough.
Right.
I know it's a good camp when 2 weeks out, I'm like, dear God, I do not want to drive to the gym right now.
Well, you know, I've always said that, you know, if you just have somebody make you run hills for 10 minutes. Just running hills is a nightmare.
Yeah, and then rest, and then come back and do it about three or four more times, and that's my life.
When I was 17 years old, I went to Dan Gable's intensive wrestling camp.
That's awesome.
Yeah, in Iowa. And first of all, they trained us, quote-unquote, like a champion, which means you wake up at 5:30 in the morning, and you do sprints for an hour. Talk about overtraining, dude.
Yeah.
This is why Dan Gable has two fake hips and fake knees.
True.
Retarded, right?
True. Ridiculous.
Iowa still overtrains, as far as I'm concerned. But they produce champions. But
almost everyone does, but...
Of course, almost everybody does. But what I realized when I was 17, when I was limping for 2 weeks, I was like, I don't want to wrestle in college. If this is what college wrestling is, I'm not fucking doing this. I can't do it.
It takes a unique breed. This is awesome.
Dude,
I want to do this for the rest of my life.
I gave myself a psychosomatic back injury.
Yeah, man. It's so weird to me how, you know, when you're pushing yourself in the gym or, you know, when I played at the University of Colorado, they would make us do some crazy stuff. And I knew I was built for this when it would get real crazy and I'd see guys falling out and dropping off. I got, you know, that gave me motivation. I loved that.
Yeah.
When guys would quit and I still would be going, that's what I live for, man.
Right. But do you ever feel like, so the difference between football and fighting is the mental aspect in
100%.
The sense that, but football, in other words, there is more training required of a fighter. There's more discipline. There are more disciplines you have to get good at, I'd imagine.
There's more disciplines because there's not one guy in the UFC. There's gonna be soon. This next breed generation is going to be some monsters. However, in my generation, this kind of group of fighters in the UFC now, even the young guys and older guys and myself kind of in the middle there, we didn't grow up mixed martial artists. We grew up in one aspect, where there's boxing, jiu-jitsu, taekwondo, karate.
Right. Rory McDonald is more of an example.
Rory, like a little bit.
Yeah.
But he came from a taekwondo background, but he did start in a regular mixed martial arts gym. But we're going to see more kids who actually are doing mixed martial arts instead of just one aspect.
My thing, though, about that is I wonder sometimes if that's necessarily going to breed a better fighter.
I think it waters it down.
Yeah, it
a little
might
bit.
Water it down, and then
because then
to
you're
ask,
just average at everything.
Right,
you're a good fighter, but you're not great at boxing or great at jiu-jitsu,
right.
Great at wrestling.
Right,
you're kind of well-rounded at everything.
In a way, it's almost impossible to be great at everything. I mean, I guess Anderson Silva is the closest you can come to something like
closest, but I think his wrestling is the only question when it comes to him.
But he's
so good on the ground and striking, so dominant that it kind of evens it out. But you can't say he's a great wrestler. You don't see him taking guys down like Chael Sonnen.
Why do you think he's so far ahead of everybody else as a striker? What is it? Is it just his level of boxing?
I think it's his mental aspect. You look at him in there, and he's just so relaxed, and he sees everything, and his distance. He's very good at distance and control. And
he
stuff.
Fights more at a taekwondo distance or something.
I think so. I think so. And he just takes advantage of everyone's mistakes because he sees everything.
He's so fast,
and he's a step ahead of everyone. I think that's just from experience. A lot of people don't know about Anderson Silva is when he's fighting in Pride, he lost two in a row, and he's going to retire and start a gym in Brazil.
I didn't know that.
He was going to retire, and Nogueira talked him out of it, said, just give it one more shot. Let's see what happens. The rest is history.
I had no idea about that.
He was going to retire, lost two straight. He was going to retire.
I love hearing about extreme winners and champions because everybody as a human being goes through self-doubt.
Oh, everyone does. You kidding me? In this sport, this is the difference. This is why I think fighters are so loved by the fans and people like that because in NBA, NFL, MLB, those guys, they're never really humbled. They never are. They're kind of spoon-fed. They grow up this superstar.
Yep.
Even when they get to the NBA or NFL, you're still the man all the time.
Yep.
Everyone's yes man around you. In mixed martial arts, anyone who's good at their job, you're getting humbled damn near every single day.
Right.
If you walk in the gym, you think you're a badass. Someone's going to tear you up. It's just the nature of the sport.
I was going
to
say.
No one's undefeated. Tell me one guy undefeated.
Not one guy.
Especially in the heavyweight division. I'd love to hear it.
Didn't you tell me that Alistair Overeem is the one guy who's lost like 20 times or something crazy?
Well, he's been knocked out more than anyone in the heavyweight division.
Isn't that incredible?
It's incredible. And, you know, and people are like, oh, it's his chin. It's his chin. No. Take a 265-pound man and let him punch you in the face with a 4-ounce glove. Let me know how it goes. About anyone.
And you really know this. I mean,
I know this.
I mean,
I know this.
You've done it. You've had it done.
I've had it done. I've done it more than I've had it done.
Yes, you have.
So for me, it's like, you know, when people say, oh, you have a weak chin, or Overeem has a weak chin, or Frank Mir has a weak chin. No. A 265-pound man punched him in the face.
Everybody has a weak chin in that situation.
Everyone.
I hate it.
It's more about placement. It really is. Because
accuracy.
And you turn your head the wrong way. When I lost Roy Nelson, he hit me behind the ear. There's really nothing you can do for that. It's just not.
Look what happened to Cain Velasquez with Junior.
Again, hit behind the ear.
Right.
And people go, oh, he lost that fight. He didn't lose that fight.
No.
He got caught. And then what happened the second time when they fought? That was a fight.
That I was amazed. I really was amazed at that fight, to watch the pace not only that Cain puts on a man.
I love it.
I know about that, but his excellent boxing. He just had his head in that guy's chest the whole time.
Just the grind. I don't think people understand the
demoralizing
amount, the grind and the stamina it took. And you could tell he was tired, and he just reached down deep inside and just kept grinding 5 rounds. That is a beast as a heavyweight.
Well, what's amazing also about Junior and about any of you guys is that, you know, I've done just such an amateur amount of wrestling and jiu-jitsu that when you're losing or you're tired, I've also did enough taekwondo where I got knocked out. And you get knocked out.
Yeah.
You don't want to fight again. You don't want to do anything. Mm-mm. When you're losing and you're exhausted, somebody's on you. When you're a regular guy like me, you just want to quit. You don't want to do it. And in the UFC, you're not only that, you're getting punched in the face while it's happening. You're in a real fight. And you see time and again guys come back from that and win.
It's crazy.
That's really the difference.
That's the mental aspect. That's the difference.
What do you think?
It's no difference than well, you know, obviously we're not saving people's lives and lives are being taken, so the risks are different. But that's the similarity with the Army Rangers or the Navy SEALs. There's a ton of guys in the Navy.
Yep.
There's a very chosen few that who are Navy SEALs.
Right.
And it's the mental aspect.
Mm-hmm. That's what every time I talk to a Special Forces guy, they always say that.
Oh, I love talking to
guys. It's really important, too, though. I like hearing from guys like you, you know, who other people look up to. Because a lot of people I notice, they quit. When it gets hard, they quit.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is that the people that they admire have failed a lot of times way more than they've succeeded to get where they have.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You have to fail.
There was a time when I was playing football and I was in Buffalo in my hotel and I was like, man, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to compete in sports anymore. I'm going to go. I don't know. I think I was applying to like freaking AAA or something like that, insurance or something. You know, I didn't know
what
a
shame that would have been.
Yeah, I don't know what I was going to do, you know? So in college, there was times when I was working my tail off and wasn't playing. And, you know, I went to I'll never forget this. When I was 14 years old, I went to University of Colorado football camp. And the coach, I'm not going to mention names, that I looked up to, looks down and goes, oh, your feet are too big. You'd never make it.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was 14. I was like, okay.
Your feet are too big. You'll never make it.
Yeah, I was backpedaling. He goes, oh, that Schaub kid, his feet's too big. He's never going to make it.
Wow.
What a dick, right?
Yeah, that's it. Hey, thanks. Hey, thanks for crushing my 14-year-old dreams.
I'm 14, dick.
Thanks for clipping my wings. I haven't even fucking sprouted yet.
I
see some feathers. Let's prune this fucking kid.
You believe that?
And
I'll tell you the difference.
That's jealousy or weirdness.
I'm not sure.
But it's important to realize that when you want to be a winner, that kind of energy, that kind of suppressive energy is coming from everywhere.
You know what it is? You know what it is? And the reason why, and I'm just getting started. I haven't done anything. So I'm not talking like, you know, I've made it to the pinnacle of sport or anything like that. I have a long ways to go. Mm-hmm. I really do. To me, I'm just getting started. I'm young in my career. I'm in a good spot. But the difference, I think, is no one believes in themselves more than I do. Someone tells me no, I almost like it these days.
Wow.
So, and I think that's the difference. And even in football, I remember there was kids who were more talented, or probably more talented than the starters, but the coaches didn't believe them. And they always told them, oh, you can't do that. You can't do this. And then the other kids, they tell you can, and they would go do it. So it was just all about believing
what is
in yourself.
What do you think it is? What happened to you where you had to create a psychological profile that allowed you to believe in yourself the way you do? What do you think in your childhood or your what are the seminal moments do you think that kind of got you to where you are?
That's a great question.
Pretty
good at this.
I'm a very good question asker.
This is your first rodeo.
No, it sure isn't.
Yeah.
And I have a really sensual voice, too.
Yeah, my pants are coming off.
Brennan, can I ask you a question? I'm going to take my pants off because it's very hot in your apartment. Apartment. Is there an echo in here? No, just my dick came out. Makes everything look fucking big. Purple root. Did somebody say purple root? That's just my dick. Sorry, back to serious.
You know what it is? I get my confidence through, I just train harder than anyone. I just want it more. I'm a dreamer. I am such a dreamer, man.
Oh, you're a dreamer.
Oh, my God.
That's
I'm a dreamer.
A very good answer to me.
Yeah.
That's like, a very good answer. Explain
that. I shoot for the moon, I land on the stars, man. My dreams are crazy.
So you in your mind, you visualize the being a champion.
Being a champion and even more than that. Like my dreams are crazy.
Do you fantasize about being king of the world?
King of the world. Damn near. So whenever I accomplish something, it's to me it's really I never appreciate it. I just keep on moving. I'm like, oh, that's good.
Well, isn't it funny moving. How when you do accomplish something and you get there, it's never enough.
It's never what you see. No, it's never what you see.
You get to the top of that wall and you're like, there's another wall to climb.
Yeah,
I gotta keep going.
God. I'm just never satisfied, and I think you know, and that runs into my personal life. I'm just never. It's
well,
nothing's
know,
ever enough.
We
hang out. We're buddies. Dude, we're really good buddies.
Exactly.
You know what's going on.
I know exactly
here.
What's going on. You know, you came to my show the other night with a certain famous fighter. I don't know if I can, but anyway, and it was funny because, you know, I was there and I was like, should I do? You know, should I do? You're always kind of as a comic. You're like, should I do your tried and true stuff, or should you try?
Yeah,
just
yeah.
try. You know, yeah. I'm in this experimental phase,
goes.
And I almost like that more.
Heck yeah.
than I've done all this.
You've
I've had.
You
great,
know, people are gonna laugh.
Right.
At it.
I've done great
yeah.
shows where people
yeah.
go crazy, but there's something about getting up there where I'm not sure what's gonna happen. Where I'm kind of fumbling. Where I'm not really. I'm kind of like it's all haphazard. That's just more
it's
exhilarating
unknown.
To me.
It's
yeah,
the
it's
unknown.
The unknown, man.
It's the strange.
It's the strange.
It's the strange.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am an animal. I like variety. Well, that is, but that does bleed
never
over your
satisfied.
Personal life.
Oh, yeah. In everything, never satisfied.
And a man ultimately has to, you know, you're still young and 28, and you know, but it's. I guess when you're 50, you have to start to come to terms with that. I'm a lot younger than that. The point is. Well, but there is a lot of, you know, in society, there's what's funny is that in our culture or just society in general, there are a lot of forces that are trying to get you to settle. They're trying to get you to settle down and just to accept this or take what you can get.
100%.
And so your point of view, your mindset is very different. And I think it's essential to win. It's essential to win, right?
I agree. To be a champion or to be, you know, a world-class athlete, I think... Man, you got it. It's a lonely world.
Just wanting.
It's a lonely world.
But exactly.
I gotta be honest.
It is lonely, right? Because
it
just admitting that you want something really badly is not something people talk about. And certainly you're almost made to feel ashamed of it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's just the sacrifices you make. Like, you know, like when I'm in camp, I'll go out to dinner with my buddies and there'll be a group of girls and they're all going out to get drinks after. I go home. You know,
you
I go home, go to bed because I get a big
yep.
practice in the morning.
You,
it's stuff like
you
that.
You jack off furiously. You hunch over in a corner
just
crying and just, hit it. What the fuck is that noise? Ah, Brennan's jacking off again. And that's you dumping. I'm dumping. Instead of saying coming, you say I'm dumping.
Oh, my God.
Me and my buddies always joke about that. I'm going to fucking dump. It's so condescending. It's so disgusting. Instead of cum, I'm
going to
dump.
It's not attractive.
Hey, you guys, this is, you ever heard my impression of the literal and very polite pervert?
No.
Hi, do you know if there's anywhere I can come out of my dick around here? That's my impression. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. This is the kind of shit. I just finished interviewing this top fucking trial lawyer. We're talking about philosophy and shit. Now you and I are talking about coming out of our dicks.
Dump it.
God, what's wrong with me?
That's a good job.
But that is kind of what's fun about life and you know, having friends. I love fighters. I've always, you know, for me, we always have a good time. You always. And I, always. And there's just something about fighters for me. You know, I'm good friends with Nate Marcourt or Eve Edwards or I got to know Donald Cerrone and I've never met
all
a fighter.
Great guys.
I've never met a fighter. I just didn't love being around, partially because I've always wanted to be a fighter. But more importantly, it's not that. You cannot be a good fighter without being humble, without being the kind of person that doesn't. It's a beautiful combination of somebody who doesn't take themselves seriously, but has to take themselves seriously.
You know, I think it's a combination of, you know, they're humbled, but there's also this. I hate using this word because it's definitely overused these days, but it's almost a swagger where people confuse it with cockiness.
Yeah.
But you got to be pretty confident to get in the ring in your undies without a shirt,
on
another
TV.
Trained killer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In a steel cage. In front of millions of people. You got to be a little confident you're going to do all right in there. People take my confidence as cockiness all the time.
I don't. I actually know you pretty well. And one of the things I think is really neat about you is that I never think of you as a fighter.
Yeah.
You're the least macho person I've ever met.
Probably.
You're really not. You're kind of like a silly goose.
Yeah,
I never think of you as a fighter.
Yeah. I met with a sponsor the other day. I was in the Beats by Dre studios.
Uh-huh.
And they're showing me around. And we get done, you know, I'm making people laugh, whatever. I did a joke and it went over horribly,
horribly.
It was pretty awesome. I'll tell you what I said. But, you know, I'm going around hanging out with this group of people for a while. And all the sports marketing people are just like, man, we were a little nervous for you to come in here. And I was like, really? Why? They're like, I don't know. Figured UFC fighter, they're going to be like mean and aggressive. She's like, you're like the nicest guy we've ever had in here.
I felt
like,
that
I'd
way.
Try, man.
I felt that way about Nate Marcourt because he was such my favorite fighter. And he's so vicious. And we did this movie Warrior and he was there. And I was like, I just had to go and say hi. And he was like, oh, hi.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Soft-spoken.
I'm like, this guy's fucking, I couldn't believe how sweet he was.
Yep.
Meanwhile, he's a stone-cold killer.
Yeah. It's cool, man.
But it goes back to what you're saying. You can't be a top-ranked fighter. Everybody you know who's fought has been knocked out at least 5 times in their life, you know.
You've been humbled. And if you're the top dog in your gym and you're whooping everyone's ass, you're not going to last long.
Yeah.
It's not good. When you're a top dog, you got to move out of there.
Well, what are you afraid of? How do you deal with fear? How do you deal with the concept and the idea of fear? Do you not indulge it or
No, I think everyone gets nervous. Anyone who tells you they don't get nervous is lying to you. If you're not nervous, it's not important. Mm. So
I've heard about, I won't mention the fighter's name, that there's a great fighter who has to be talked out of the fucking locker room. He's
yeah,
so afraid.
Yeah, yeah, yes, there's some crazy stuff that crazy stuff that goes on in the back. But you know, I think as far as fear, I just. That's the difference, guys overcoming that fear and just getting comfortable in there and, you know, those butterflies making them fly in sync and stick into the game plan. Because, you know, I've had some fights, especially in the Nogueira fight and the Rothwell fight, where, you know, I didn't get into my groove and I let the fear get to me and I just wanted to knock them out right away. And you open yourself up and you make mistakes. This last fight, you know, if you watch the fight, I get in there and before I even get in there, I look around, I just embrace the crowd. And like, this is exactly, I love being in front of a crowd.
You're riding as opposed to drowning.
I love it. Yeah. I thrive off
You took
this.
A shot too. I mean, a lot of guys,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
I mean,
I don't know if they show on the replay. I still haven't seen the fight yet, but
yeah,
he hits me with his infamous uppercut that landed him 2 knockouts on the night. And,
right.
Man, he busted my jaw, split my lip, upper and bottom. I got stitches in him as we talk.
But that's what's kind of amazing is that you were able to keep your composure. I mean, most people right there just go, oh, I quit.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because that's kind of a little bit like the difference between a rookie and a veteran.
It is.
A veteran is able to wait and understands the waiting game, understands 100%. Letting things come to him as opposed to constantly reaching.
You're right. And,
right?
You know, and I've had this last fight was, if you count my Ultimate Fighter fights, with my 16th fight or 17th fight. But you got to remember, when I'm fighting guys like, when I fought Roy Nelson, I had 4 fights. So I had 4 fights.
Christ.
He had 25, former
Hilarious.
World champ. When I fought, you know, Krokop, Gonzaga, Nogueira, Ben Rothwell,
Killers, by the way.
LeVar Johnson, these guys have two, three times, four times the amount of fights
easily,
I do.
Easily.
So, you know, when I watch The Ultimate Fighter, I watch those videos, those old fights. I'm like, oh, my God, look at this kid, man. I was just in there just – I was just tougher than everyone.
Well, you're very athletic and talented. Yeah. But yeah, you're right.
I'm like so aggressive.
You were relying on that.
Just going in there
that.
To kill.
Yeah,
you were relying on
that.
And now, you know, experience is priceless. It is so – and for my last fight, I got in there. I was comfortable, stuck to a game plan, and – I've never grown so much from a fight than this last one.
So much of the UFC now as it has evolved, it seems to me, and I was talking to Greg Jackson about this, is, you know, really, you've got to have a very intelligent camp. You've got to have strategists. It's not 100%. All up to you. If you don't have good strategy going into a fight, you're gonna have a hole that other team is going to see and exploit.
You know, and I said this before the LeVar Johnson fight. The fight kept getting canceled, got postponed. So it was about damn near a year since the last time I fought. So when me and LeVar fought, you gave me and my team a year, almost a year to game plan for you. Dude.
That's a long time.
It's like giving Nick Saban, the bowl game layoff.
What was the plan?
The plan was to get him to commit and take him down and control him on the ground and submit him.
How were you? What was the answer to his massive power in his hands?
Yeah, the answer is to never to either I'm
never stay in the pipe. Always
either
be
I'm in or I'm out.
Okay.
And in this fight, he would come charging in so hard, I really didn't have time to get out. So I would close the gap and then take him down from there. And right. he's way bigger than I am. The last guy that. Even that I've trained with that who's of mass to LeVar Johnson would be Shane Carwin. And that's what my wrestling coach said. He goes, well, he's no Shane Carwin. Then he looks at him at Wayne's. He goes, he's damn close.
Jesus. God, that's so weird. Because
he's taller.
Taller. You remember when Shane picked me up and started to squeeze me.
Dude.
And I was tapping and he goes, that's 40%, bro.
Yeah.
And
Shane's another level.
You could squeeze me to death.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's great, isn't it?
It feels really good as a man to have somebody be able to squeeze you like a toy. But and I was squeaking. But you trained with Shane for a while. I mean, when I first met you.
Shane was my first training partner. One of my best friends. This is how it happened with Shane Carwin. I knew I wanted to fight in the UFC. Wanted to be a fighter since seeing the movie Bloodsport many, many years ago. The first UFC was in Denver in 1993.
Right.
Fell in love with it. My uncle would rent me the VHSs when I come home from school. So I was just an uber
fan. I said,
fan.
What turned you into what made you want to be a fighter? You were like, Bloodsport, the movie?
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Just saw him at Gold's Gym, by the way. Anyways, I wanted to get into all that. And then I got on the internet and Googled UFC fighters Denver, and only one name popped up, and that was Nate Marquardt. And it was in Aurora. My hometown's in Aurora. So I drive up to his gym, and I'm in, and Nate's at the front desk, working the front desk.
No.
He owned the gym. Oh, it was high altitude martial arts in Aurora. And, I walk in, and I tell Nate what I want to do. And, you know, Nate was very supportive. Who knows? If Nate would be like, oh, this isn't for you, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I might have been selling insurance right now.
I
don't know.
Wow.
So Nate was very cool. Goes, you know what? You're a little big for anyone here right now, but why don't you come back tomorrow about 6:00? We got a guy for you.
You're a little big for anyone.
A little big for anyone. There's a small guy. It's like a gi class.
Because
you're a little big. Come back tomorrow at 6:00.
I can see you in a gi class with a bunch of guys my size.
It's like Kramer.
My guard doesn't work on him.
Yeah.
Teacher.
Yeah,
teacher,
right?
my triangle's not working on the big guy.
So I come back the next day at 6 p.m., I walk in and I see this massive human being in Shane Carwin.
Oh no! So it was Shane.
And Shane had one fight at the time. And Nate goes, Brendan Schaub, Shane Carwin, you guys are training partners now. And Shane's like, oh, what's up? You know, Shane's the coolest guy ever.
Yeah, biggest hand in the world.
Let's do this, man. And we train together. And he goes, hey, tomorrow sparring. You want to spar? And at the time, I haven't sparred a single day. Did some boxing previously, but never sparred MMA. I go, sure. And I remember pulling in the next day, waiting in my car, thinking, do I want to do this? And I go in nervous as hell. And me and Shane, literally, neither one of us knew what we were doing, stood there with no headgear on, punching each other with 60-ounce gloves like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. And then after that, this crazy bond happened. And every day for the next 5 years, we trained together.
Who's been your most I always say that I think striking is a harder thing to get good at than wrestling is. Would you agree with that or no?
It's tough. It's super tough.
I ask you because you started doing both at the same time.
To be an offensive wrestler and to hit reshots and to, you're talking about skills.
Yeah, that's
you're
a lot of skills. Sure.
And then when you're talking about boxing, you're talking about angles and jabs and to be a complete boxer, they're both so tough in their own right.
I just mean that like,
jiu-jitsu's a beast too. I think jiu-jitsu, you know, it takes, you know, average 10 to 12 years to get your black belt. There's a reason for that. People think they're going to jiu-jitsu and you're going to be doing all these cool submissions. No. You're going to be shrimping, learn the basics for a lot of time.
You got to learn the basics, though. You
got to. That's like the problem with the sport, some of the guys.
Right. My friend who trains me is like, you know, he was like, control the head and hips. Head and hips, head and hips.
Basics
and hips.
Wins fights. Yeah. Basics wins fights.
When we were doing mitts, I wanted to hit the mitts because I can hit it. He goes, I know you can hit mitts. Everybody can hit mitts. Yeah. You want to show me you can hit mitts? Yeah. Right. You're a pro fighter. You want to show me how you hit mitts?
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I can. Left, right, and then hook. He goes, no. And he had these sticks, and it was all about footwork. He was making me jab over and over again and step jabs. I was always moving, moving when you punch. I was like, this is fucking, I don't want to do this.
You don't see too much fancy stuff in the striking game. Anderson Silva gets real fancy.
You don't see fancy stuff in real fighting. In great wrestlers. You watch great wrestlers. It's all double single, leg. Double. It's arm drag, shucks. Yep. It's all the basics.
You're just good at setting it up. You're good at getting to the basics.
Right. You can get away with those flying kicks once in a fight. You know,
but if it's your bread and butter, you're in the UFC maybe one fight. You have to.
Yeah.
You look at Klitschko, the Klitschko brothers. Mm-hmm. They don't throw anything really besides a one and a two punch. And they're the best in the world as far as boxing goes.
They are.
There's no one even close.
It's amazing. They're big boys. I've met them.
Big boys, tall.
I mean, they're tall.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Another group of guys that make me feel like, I have calcium deficiency. So have you given yourself a timeline? It's a bad question. Don't answer that question.
No, let's hear it.
I don't want you to.
Retiring.
No. I'm winning the championship, but I don't like that question because I don't want to. I don't even want to put that in your head. See, I'm very protective of my friends who are fighters.
We're boys. Yeah.
No. I'm protective of, because like with Nate and stuff. I remember the first thing I said to you was with the Ultimate Fighter. I was like, compliments. And what people say to you, you have to be very careful when you're competing on listening to even people say nice things about
either
you.
Either or.
Yeah, because they define you. You don't want anybody defining you. You know,
right.
I'm always really, really careful and protective of people who are on their way to winning or trying to compete and giving it their all. Because as a performer,
right.
I know how sensitive
your
headspace
can be. You know, and I think as far as defining and, people associate with a certain – he's a knockout artist. He's a jiu-jitsu
artist. I hate that. I talked to Nate about that.
So with my last fight, you know, when I came in, the whole fight was billed, don't get out of your seat. Someone's getting knocked out in the first round. They're both knockout artists.
Oh, I hate that.
No. Don't get it twisted. LaVar's a knockout artist.
Yeah.
Solely a knockouter. There is no other way he can win besides knocking out. He's not going to. He has no submission on the record.
Right.
He's never been to decision. Mm-hmm. He's never been out of the second round. That's a knockouter.
Right.
Label him a knockouter. He's 35 years old.
Yeah,
I'm a young guy. Have I knocked guys out? Sure. Have I knocked more guys out than LaVar in the UFC? Yes, I have. Am I a knockouter? No. I'm an athlete.
You're a mixed martial artist. And a fighter who's going to fight your fight.
Exactly.
And you have no idea what's going to happen in front of you in that moment.
I might take you down. I might box you.
I think the best way to say it is I react.
I react, yeah.
You
tell me how you want to lose.
Hey, man.
You want to keep on the feet and give me holes in your stand-up game? Right. I'm going to knock you out. You want to go to the ground and leave holes with your submission game? I'm submitting.
I liken it to music. You can't start dancing until you hear the music.
Yeah, man.
Your body's got to react to
the best advice I ever got. And it was recently in this camp is my buddy Jeff Suskin, dear friend of mine. I meet with him every day out there.
He's a fighter? Or?
He's not. He's just kind of I do some mental breathing stuff with him. Mm-hmm. And he's a jiu-jitsu black belt, and we go over a lot of jiu-jitsu with him. And he goes, you know, your last two fights, he was like, you're like a musician. You're getting out there, and you're going to the course right away. He goes, play your song, man. Warm up. Play your song, and then, because you're better as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Let people hear your song.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I like to fight. I like to, you know, start off slow and then end it with a big bang.
But see, you're describing fighting, but you're also describing life.
Life.
You're talking about life. I don't think.
Everyone's in a rush. Everyone's in a rush.
The beautiful thing about getting good at one thing is you learn about everything.
You're right.
When you master one thing, life itself no longer becomes a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I get to what I, with stand-up being able to read a crowd the way that I've learned how to do, or doing the things I've done to an audience, watching my imagination sort of bear fruit and become something. Life itself no longer becomes as much of a mystery. I'm not overwhelmed anymore with the way I was as a young man. As a young man, I always thought, I don't know anything, and all those people over there know everything.
Yep.
There's the idea that I'm not even worthy. Like, I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And I was.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. Those people have some secret society where they get all the secrets given to them.
Well, if you bring your friend you brought to dinner the other night, we're all going to feel that. How about that guy? I had my smart glasses on. I literally took them off mid-conversation.
He's talking about, Brendan's talking about my buddy Hunter Matsu.
Speaks nine languages.
I've done 2 podcasts with him already. Yeah.
Guy's a genius.
Yeah, go to my legacy files.
Went to Harvard.
Dude,
speaks Arabic, Russian, German.
French, Spanish, Italian, like Dutch. It's retarded.
He's single, ladies.
He's single, ladies.
Big brain.
He's got a big brain.
Big brain.
Big head of hair, too. He's like 6'3". Hunter Motz. What a name.
Look him up.
Look him up, ladies. Look him up. He will fuck your mind. The only thing I look at you, when I look at you, Brendan, and you're a young, good-looking guy, you look Iranian, by the way. This idea that you're German's hilarious to me. But the only thing I can pray is that I have a much bigger cock and a better personality. which is, you know,
the given,
the low laughter. what else do you want to talk about? I'm fucking, how much time have we done so far? 33 minutes.
That's a long podcast. Damn, right? Is that long? I don't know.
No, I usually go between, you know, 30 and 50.
All right.
Do you see a sports psychiatrist? Most of you guys,
Sports psychologist. Yeah, I do. You know, early in my career, I didn't use one. You know, I was a little bit, you know, cocky fighter, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Didn't think that stuff was for me. Thought that was for the weak-minded.
Getting knocked out takes the cocky out of a man, doesn't it?
You know what? So I've been blessed because I've been around MMA royalty since day one. Shea Carwin, Nate Marquardt, George St. Pierre, Rashad Evans. Mm-hmm. I'm around these guys all the time. So my career was kind of in hyper mode because I see all these guys fighting for titles, you know, living this crazy life, and I want the same thing. So,
That's interesting. You were actually seeing it right in front of you, and in some ways it's almost easier to attain.
Oh, because I see
it becomes your norm, right?
Yeah. So yeah. To me, you know, I'm surrounded by that. I'm surrounded by it, and those are guys I look up to, and I feel, you know, and
you're training.
I'm one of them, you know, and I see my skills, I see their skills, and it's just a matter of, you know, getting it done in the octagon, mm-hmm. and then, when you're around that, that's what you expect. So, you know, when I say I dream big, man, I expect to be on the main card. I expect to be in a title fight.
Sure.
I expect to be on prime time. I expect to be at the open workouts. When I'm not, it literally hurts my feelings. I literally go back. When I get my schedule, if I'm not on the open workouts and on the main card and at all the press conferences, at post, pre-conference, ton of interviews, if guys are getting over it, it literally hurts my feelings.
That's
drives me absolutely insane.
Well, that whatever works for you, whatever your motivation is, and it's beautiful that you're honest about that, because a lot of guys wouldn't be honest.
No, not
at
all. Most guys are like, oh, it's not a big deal.
No,
man,
but
it's a big
deal. But it's great that you voice it, because I think that's the other thing I really find refreshing about you. There's no bullshit. I mean, you're an open book that way, but I think that serves you, you know. But when you, what are some of the things, you know, because I always talk about sports performance anxiety and how important managing your mental state
For sure.
is there something you do every day? Is it when you talk to a sports psychologist, what are the things you find helpful?
Writing it down, writing your goals down and writing your game plan down and writing exactly what you want to achieve and how you're going to get there. Mm. Of course, everyone wakes up, they have a plan. Oh, I want to get this done. I want to get this done. But have you really written it down and gone into detail how you're going to get there?
I speak about that all the time.
I want to be world champ. All right. That's a huge ass goal. For me, it started with LeVar Johnson. And then now the next step and the next step and the next step. But you got to break it down into these small details.
Because that's what keeps you motivated.
It's what keeps you motivated and what keeps it attainable.
Where do you go when you don't have inspiration? What do you do? What actions do you take when you just feel completely unmotivated? Do you look at a picture of me? Do you YouTube me?
I YouTube you. I'll watch one of your many shows. I don't know where to start.
Good. Go to BrianCallen.com, you fucks.
You know, as far as motivation, man, I can't get enough of it.
So you don't really feel that. You're so excited just to be here. And I'm so excited. About
look where we're at right now, man. I attained this by punching other guys in the face and getting punched in the face.
It's great. I love this apartment, by the way.
Yeah,
this apartment
is a
sweet bachelor pad. I can just think of all the things not to be, but I'm just looking at this view of the ocean and the marina, and there'd be a lot of handprints on that fucking window.
Yeah,
and they wouldn't be mine.
Things get weird.
Things get weird up in here. They get real weird up in here. Brenda, why are you wearing just a Speedo? Why do you smell like cologne?
Why is there oil everywhere?
So weird.
No, you know what? As far as motivation, I don't need it. I wake up every day motivated as heck. Just because I feel like I haven't done anything.
Yeah.
I feel like I haven't even done anything.
But you walk around also bigger and stronger than most people. And I was laughing, Dove David off the comic, and I were laughing as we were looking at you. We were like, well, that dude right there could beat the shit out of most of the planet. I mean,
yeah.
if it's a world sport, I'm coming in 1 billion.
1 billion.
And I'm not that much of a pussy. I'm
dude,
coming in.
Out of 6 billion.
Out of six billion. By the way, that might be bullshit. The only reason I'm saying is I've had enough fight. Most of the world hasn't.
At least you watch
anything.
The sports, so you have an idea what to do.
But I wrestled and I did.
True.
I was a black belt in Taekwondo.
True.
And I did a lot of jiu-jitsu.
True.
You know. But I think it's very cocky of me to say that I come in 1 billion.
I agree with you. 1 billion.
It's cocky.
I like it. Though.
I don't know though. Am I better than 5 billion?
If you
people?
Said 5 billion, we probably wouldn't hang out.
Right.
If you're that guy,
Then but I mean, even saying that is a little cocky. But I would give you in world placing. It's arguable that you're in the. I mean, I'm just talking about this among 6 billion people. It's impossible to say you're in the top 20, 30. It's kind of ridiculous. I know you're like fucking. I'm fucked up. I'm top 5. What the fuck are you talking about? But you know, there's always some freak out there. You
For
know,
sure.
Knows,
you know, some big dude
I mean,
is
who knows,
in
who
his
knows.
Basement crushing
yeah, some
people
fucking,
or something like
yeah.
that.
But the other funny thing about that is that we live in a world where a knife, you know, I was talking about, I went hunting.
Things.
Well, exactly. I was hunting deer and I took a tiny knife and I opened that deer's gut. I literally was a lazy, like that. And I unzipped that deer and that deer his skin is a lot thicker than anyone. And I thought to myself, I'm a fucking balloon.
Yeah.
Every tough guy, you know, like this guy, Mark Makito, I'm going to have on that. He's a knife specialist fighter and
Sick.
Stuff. And he was like, he goes, hey, what you don't realize is that it's very easy to just unzip somebody. You can just go like that. And they lose hydraulics in 8 seconds.
Crazy.
And I was like, damn, we are vulnerable human beings.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like in jail.
Not that tough.
We're not that tough.
Yeah.
Not when somebody has
not
a shank.
Tough. No.
You know?
Kind of evens the playing field.
Yeah. So in a way, as tough as you can be with your hands, it's still hard to feel not vulnerable.
For
know?
Sure. And like I said, I look at it like a sport. I've never been in a street fight.
Yeah.
I think guys who get in street fights, you're going out and you're giving that vibe. If you give out that vibe, I'm this badass.
Yeah,
don't
yeah,
mess
yeah,
with me.
Yeah.
Don't look at my girl.
Yeah.
Nah, man. Nah,
yeah.
I give up that vibe. I'm just, you know, I'm friendly. It's
right.
You know, I've never had a problem.
Especially
ever.
If you get in a fight, it's a lose situation. You
not
know,
good.
6'5", 250,
not
and
good.
A pro fighter, and
not
you beat
good.
The fuck out of somebody.
Yeah, not
it's
a
like
good
having
look.
A pit bull. It's like your dog bit my dog, but your dog bit my dog first. You got a pit bull.
Doesn't matter. Yeah,
yeah.
It looked bad.
You just need a good fucking lawyer. Well, Brendan Schaub, this has been. Actually, even better than I expected. I knew it would be good.
I thought it was gonna be some bullshit.
I knew. It's a 2-minute podcast. Yeah. Brendan, you like fighting?
Yeah.
Yeah. you are an intelligent and funny human being, and we're gonna play volleyball on Sunday.
We are in our Speedos.
I can't wait. I can't wait for that. And then we'll drink and see what happens. Happens. The last thing you'll hear is I'm straight. I'm straight. Okay, thank you, everybody. I should be mentioning my dates, but my stand-up dates, go to briancallen.com. See ya.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter @BrianCallen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/BrianCallenComedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.